from the front lines of the class war. And I'm inviting you to get together with me, Amy Goodman, Randy Rhodes, and Paul Krugman at the Ethical Culture Society on Tuesday, June 13th, 7 p.m. That's 64th Street at Central Park West, a special WBAI event. And it's $12, dirt cheap. Beat the crowd and reserve your ticket at www.gregpalast.com, www.gregpalast.com, or armedmadhouse.com. Tuesday, June 13th, 7 p.m. at the Ethical Culture Society, 64th Street at Central Park West, with Amy Goodman, Randy Rhodes, Paul Krugman, and me, Greg Palast, for WBAI, your weapon of mass instruction, Ground Zero Radio in New York City.
Thank you very much, Greg, for that. And it is 12 city, 62 degrees, and without any further ado, we are going to take it to Armand DeMille, who I guess will fix this madhouse syndrome.
This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind here on WBAI 99.5 FM on your dial, or iTunes on your podcast, however you're getting this program through us and for us today. Today, finally, as promised, I want to start my education about this thing called the bipolar depression. But before I do, I have to extensively cover some of the issues related to it. Now, this is important stuff. Whether you be a therapist, or a client, or a non-client, or an observer, or a lover, this little education I'm going to give you today, or the stuff that we're going to be doing for the next, couple of weeks, because it just doesn't end too early. Delicious. Delicious stuff. Important stuff. So before I go much further, I have to extensively cover the issue of anger. Yep, I got to go over and talk to you about anger. Now, I know you think you... What is there to know about anger? You know, anger is anger. No. Anger is not anger. Because, primarily because, first, in order to talk about bipolar depression, I have to talk about anger, because, you know, there are depressed people, and then there are bipolar depressed people, and the key ingredient here, the significant thing, is this anger. So, first, let me talk to you about anger, you know, first. And that's even way ahead of us, because in order to go there, I've got to take you on a journey, and I have to go back to talk about this incredible amygdala. Yes, the amygdala, this piece of the brain, this little block of neurons that sit in the peanut-sized subsection of the brain. It's involved in all anger and all fear. All excitement involves the amygdala. A tiny, 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 tiny little thing, right? The size of an almond. When we were kids, we said, there's no almond. Okay, so from all the facts we've presented about this, I've got to go with you again. Remember, there's a thing called the limbic system, whether you know it or not. It's in the base of the brain. Emotions run through it. You got to do the limbic system, right? But that, even if you don't know about the limbic system, we got to talk about the amygdala. Evolutionarily speaking, for purpose, what did the amygdala do for you, since it's the seat, it's the place, it's the generator of fear energy, right? It's this place that says, watch out, okay? What did it do for you? Well, you know, as we were growing up as humans, fear, a fascinating emotion, fear Without it, humans would have not survived. Fear, you know, there's a saying in psychobiology, it's better to think that a stick is a snake than to think a snake is a stick. In case you don't get that, what it means is it's better to be on guard when you see a stick and say, hey, is that a snake? Than to look at everything and say, oh, no, it's not dangerous. I mean, and there are some things in nature that, believe it or not, don't have those cautions. You know, I don't think. No, I'm thinking about something like a head of lettuce. You know, a head of lettuce. Does it say, oh, watch out, they're coming to eat us? No, I don't think they have much of an amygdala. That, okay, so, but animals do. You know, animals do. Fear, caution. Without it, we humans, born without any significant weaponry. Get this for humans. Humans, we come up, you know, we're bent over, and then we suddenly start standing up. The lion has teeth and claws. That's its weapon, and speed, and power. The gorilla has muscle and size. The common rat has teeth and speed. The cat has better vision. The dog is faster. What do humans have? Nothing. Nothing obvious but their minds. They got this big head. They got this big brain and a big head. What a weapon that turned out to be. They conquered the planet with it. But how did the mind work so well to protect them from danger? Well, although not unique to humans, the amygdala really did the job for us. And let me stress the importance of its power, the amygdala. It's the seat of fear. Yes, for the sake of simplification, think about it as a fear machine that we all have inside of us. And why do we want it? We want it because if we smell smoke, we want to be able to have a reaction. If we walk down a dark alley and we see somebody hiding in the shadows, you ask, what are you doing walking down a dark alley? No, you ask, is there a danger over there? And you hear cars screeching. You watch out to make sure nobody's getting hurt. So you hear thunder and lightning. You jump, right? And it started. It started, the amygdala. You know, you hear lightning and thunder. No, you don't hear lightning. You hear thunder. You see lightning. Oops, says the amygdala. And without a second thought, the amygdala sends a flood of virtual flood of fear notices to the brain, to all parts of the brain. The parts that control movement, the parts that control hormones, all the parts. The amygdala says, everybody watch out. I just heard something I don't like. It's like a superhighway of neural impulses screaming, watch out, get ready, watch out, get ready. This is what the amygdala does when it hears something that it believes is threatening. Now, the brain sends out signals to every part of your body as soon as it gets the message, you know, from the amygdala, as soon as it arrives. So it sends out messages down to your leg muscles, get ready, you may have to run. You know, it gets you to wake up if you're asleep. It goes to your heart to pump blood faster in case you need to take care of things. It goes to your arms and shoulders to tense up in case you have to protect yourself. It sends out all of these signals, these messages, while it's doing that. Now, while it's doing that, the much slower cortex wakes up and it says, huh, what's going on? Right? This is another part of your brain, the thinking part. So meanwhile, you're having all these automatic reactions, and all of you know, sometimes you have these fear reactions before you start thinking. So I like to characterize our thinking part as a kind of a dullard. It's slow compared to the rest of us. And the cortex wakes up and says, hey, what's going on? And the amygdala says, loud noise, watch out. So the cortex looks and says, oh, that, it's only lightning and thunder, nothing to worry about. But you see, it says it, but the noise is so loud from the amygdala fear reaction that nobody could hear it. And so the amygdala can't hear it because it's got this, it doesn't have much of a return signal coming back from the cortex. It's still sending out all these panic reactions. Let me give you an example of this. So even though your mind knows there is no danger, the rest of you is in gear. The amygdala is going nuts, raising the terror alert. We're up to orange now. We're going to go to red. We'd say, we're at yellow. Watch out, watch out, watch out. Right? But here's the problem. The amygdala, when it does transmit fear, it sends it on the superhighway using a broadband of neurons. It's still transmitting fear when the cortex tries to tell it to relax. Did you ever have a nightmare? You wake up in fear and terror. Your mind tells you, relax, it's only a dream. Well, it takes a long time for the mind to tell the body to relax and for you to go back to sleep, because your whole body is reacting as if the nightmare is real. You see, and most nightmares happen from a stimulated amygdala. The amygdala gets stimulated first, right? It goes, danger, danger. And then your mind makes up something that's a danger. It makes up the nightmare after the signal is sent. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind, talking to you about fear and anger and depression. Hoping you're learning from this. It's a very exciting story. So we're talking about this little pea-sized part of the brain called the amygdala. So the amygdala has woken every part of your body up. It's gotten you ready for war. You ever get that one of being chased down a street? Right? You get that, right? See, the amygdala sent this signal. Your legs are ready to run. Your heart's beating fast. Right? You wake up and you, oh, what's going on? Oh, it's only a dream. I'll go back to sleep. Right? Or if you're sleeping with somebody you love, they say, it's all right, honey. It's only a dream. As if it's over, if they say that to you. The cortex is calling, but it has only this single landline, broken old telephone to inform the amygdala that there is no danger. So it's hard to stop the rush of fear. Once fear starts, my friends, it's hard to stop it. Imagine a subway rush hour. Everybody's off at 5 o'clock going to the train, and they're rushing to the train, and you're there, and you lose your contact lens, and you try to stop the crowd. You say, everybody, you know, don't go rushing. Don't go stepping on that. Watch out, you know, be careful. You can't stop it. You're the little cortex. They are the amygdala. They're just flooding past you. You just can't do it. There goes your contact. The swarm of people going in one direction, your single fragile voice telling them to slow down doesn't always work. That's what it's like. Fear, it's amazing. Now get this. We're going to talk about anger. All anger is fear. Yep, all anger is fear. All anger, all the anger we ever feel, it's fear. In one way or another, you know, like think about where is it appropriate to express anger and where is it not appropriate to express anger? Where is anger good? Where is it not good? Well, the most important use of anger is with people you love. If you love someone and they do something that bothers you, your act of love is to tell them that what they did bothered you. This way, you and they can stay clear and you can love each other more. If somebody does something that annoys you but you don't know them, you got to weigh it in your own mind and say, well, am I going to tell them I'm angry or am I going to let it pass and not have that person in my life? That's a question. I knew somebody who wanted to hire an architect, and they wanted to hire an architect to build their home, but they were afraid that this person was not going to be there on the job. And the first day they hired the architect didn't show up for the job. So, I mean, what's the sensible thing to do? Not hire that architect. Right? They called up later with an excuse, but, you know, if you need your job done and you don't want to deal with anybody who treats you like this, don't hire them. Just say thank you, but no thank you. Is it important to tell them, no, because you showed up late and you didn't give me the respect of calling me, I'm not going to hire you for the job because I want a person who's going to show up on time. Is that important to tell them? Not necessarily. If you're going to get angry, save your anger for where it really counts. Anger counts when you have someone you love and you want to keep things straight. Anger counts when you're defending somebody you love. If somebody hurts somebody you love and you want to stop them, you get angry. Now, why do you get angry? I say all anger is fear. because somebody hurt someone you love, and you're frightened that they're going to get hurt again. So you stop it. You stop it by using your force. Anger is appropriate in certain given situations, but as you mature and as you get older, you get less and less angry. You express less and less anger because you begin to understand things more and more. This is Armand DeMille with you in with a positive mind, teaching you about this, teaching you wherever you are in this world about anger. Fear is amazing, and all anger is fear. Here we go again. Two guys nearly crash in a traffic almost. You know a traffic almost? It's like an accident that almost happens. Traffic almost. I had an almost. Right? How many almosts do you have in life? They start screaming anger and threats to each other. You rotten, lousy so-and-so. You are going to punch you in the ear. Right? And they start threatening to each other. And they're threatening and screaming at each other. And they're waving their fists. Now, two angry people, right? No. What they're really saying? You know, I got scared. And you know what the other person's saying? Yeah, I got scared too. And the first person saying is, gee, I got so scared. And the other person saying, I got so scared. But they can't say that. So instead they get angry. Think about 9/11, my friends. Not to bring up 9/11 just for the sake of a demonstration. But 9/11 was kind of important. 9/11, after 9/11, for the days that followed, if you had a near traffic fender bender with somebody, you know what you would have done? You would have said, oh, I got a little scared. And you would, because nobody was angry at anybody. You know why? Because everybody was scared. And everybody admitted they were scared. So fear, when it's felt and when it's expressed and when it's acceptable, mitigates anger. You don't need to have the anger. This is Armand DeMille with you with the positive mind. So when there is a, you know, there's a series on television, which is, I mean, I don't really like war and the idea of war, but there was a thing called The Band of Brothers in World War II, a documentary on soldiers, who, in this documentary, the commentator talks about fear a great deal, which is beautiful as you go through the war experience, what it was like to be in the Second World War. But they bring up the fear and all of the fear that was present. It's really a beautiful thing. It's on Home Box Office for those of you who have access to it. Fear. Fear. Now, fear on certain people. So anger is fear. And there are certain people who have a lot more anger than other people. You know them. Who do you know that's angry a lot? Who do you know that gets angry at the drop of a hat? There's a good expression, anger at the drop of a hat. Now, any person who gets angry at the drop of a hat is inappropriately angry, right? That means there's something wrong with them. Don't say to yourself, oh, they're just sensitive. Uh-uh. Person who gets angry at the drop of a hat, a person who gets angry over nothing, is a person who is out of the norm in their minds. Their mind is bent. And their mind is bent, and they're in trouble, and what they really are is frightened. But we're going to talk about the anger. If you look around you and you see angry people, and I'm not saying somebody who gets angry over an injustice. Okay, angry over an injustice is fine. Take that anger home and take it out on your children. Not so fine. Anger is inappropriate, except when you love or when you're defending. Anger is not a normal emotion. It's an abnormal emotion. It's an emotion that's hiding a true emotion, which is fear. Now, I don't say you walk around saying I'm frightened all the time, but let's say you go into a store and somebody sells you an item that you don't like. You buy it, and it's not what he said it would be, or she said it would be. right? In fact, this happened to me a little while ago. I bought a computer item, right? And then I called up the computer place. It was an Apple place. And I called up Apple and I said, this didn't do what you said it was going to do. And so I tried to get them on the phone. They were saying, well, it should have done it. We never said it did. And I said, but you did. I clearly said it. And I was insisting, and I noticed I had this person who was trying to help me out until I got angry because they put me on hold 17 times. And then I showed my anger. As soon as I showed my anger, they disconnected me. Boom. So I said, oh, rah, 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 rah. I got like that. You know, the gorilla in me comes out, hang up on me. And then I realize, why do they, some guy who's in, they're actually in Iowa, no, they're in Ohio State, right? They're in Ohio. They're in Ohio. Why does this person in Ohio who's taking this call dare have to deal with somebody who's yelling at them? They don't do that. They just hang up on me. So I looked at it and I giggled at myself and I'm saying, what am I doing yelling at them? I got back on the phone and I understood this was just going to be one of these long things that I had to do. 2.5 hours later, I had everything resolved exactly as I wanted it resolved. But I understood my anger on that phone is not appropriate, especially with somebody who's doing a job where they're trying to do the best they can. Anger is inappropriate, but people who express inappropriate anger, people who get angry at bus drivers, people who get angry at their children, people who get angry at their bosses, and express it inappropriately. Now, what does that mean? If you're going to have a relationship with somebody, if you have a boss, don't tell your boss you're angry. Your boss is not going to like it. Your boss does not say to you, oh, thank you very much for bringing... I mean, I do. I'm a boss. And if somebody comes to me with their anger, I appreciate it. But there's not many of me around. I say, oh, thank you very much for bringing that to my attention. But if you don't have any kind of relationship with your, they call them leaders nowadays, you don't go to your leader and say, I'm angry. You go to your leader and says, I was a little, I'm upset by what went on. I'd like to tell you about it. And you don't blame your boss. Because the boss is going to get rid of you. Because in a company, especially in a big company, they think, is there anybody here who's angry? Let's get rid of them. That's why there are certain people, especially those who are qualified or are called borderline personality disorder, who are known for their rage, who can't keep a job. Because their outbursts that happen at work, maybe even not with their bosses, are picked on. Immediately the signal goes up. There's an angry person. Oh, it's an angry person. Let's keep an eye on him. Yep, that person got angry at the donut seller. Or at the person who served the coffee. Or at the messenger. And as soon as the bosses see that, leaders, they put that person on a little thing and they say, we don't want that energy here. So the person loses job after job after job, and they feel justified. They say, I just tried to tell them what I felt. No, it's not a place to tell people what you feel. Go tell your best friend how you feel about your job. But at your job, you try to be as positive as you could be, or quiet as you could be, or as negotiating as you could be. So anger... being expressed inappropriately, which means spilling out around you, is a sign that the person is disturbed. How are they disturbed? They're frightened. They're more frightened than they could be. Their brain has not caught up to their body. They're reacting as if in some kind of panic. Okay, so let's look at men. You take a man and you pump him up with one of the neurotransmitters, which happened to be any of the hormones, the male hormone, right? So the man now has testosterone flooding through his system, which is also a neurotransmitter. Testosterone is kind of flooding through, and here are the guys and they're playing football. And so now they start making noise as if they're going to go out there and they're going to rip off the heads of the opponents. And they go, rah, 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 and they bump against each other's head and they pump themselves up. And they pump their bodies up to be in this total warlike thing. and they go running out on the field, really scary. And then one guy on a football line is looking over at another guy who's on the opposing team, and the other guy happened to have been his roommate back in college. And the guy looks at him and says, ruh, 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 and you say, ruh, 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 and then the guy says, hey, by the way, how's your mother? You know what I mean? And you smile because it doesn't go with the ruh, ruh, ruh. And then you haul off and you go against each other. I mean, just imagine men in war. You're right, you pump them up and you have them in Vietnam. And you have them so scared and so frightened and so terrified, not only of the Viet Cong, but of Agent Orange, of everything that goes on in Vietnam. And Vietnam was so frightening, you can't imagine how scary it was. Worse than World War II. It was the scariest possible thing. The jungle and the people coming at you and sticks and warfare that you couldn't imagine. And you're terribly scared. And then you walk into a town called My Lai, right? Of course you lose your mind. Of course your anger spills out and creates victims. We talk about PMS in women. You talk about men when their hormones are flooded. What about a man who goes out on a date and he has a few drinks and his testosterone is going and he's got a date that he just went out with and he's alone with her and he feels like having sex and she says, hold off, hold off, hold off. Well, you know, his body is doing the same thing that the amygdala does. It's now turned on. And all of him is turned on, and now he's sexually turned on, and he doesn't know what to do. He's really in a kind of a sexual panic. And his brain is saying, listen to the lady. She's saying she's not interested right now. Well, some guys, they just can't get out of the trap. That's when you have date rape. You know, that's when that trap of sexuality can get a man crazy. That's when war can get a man crazy. That's when PMS can make a woman do things that are based on fear and anger than based on reality. Because we don't have the signal going back to our brain that says, calm down. We have to condition that signal. And some people have it, and some people don't. Some people get by being angry all the time. It's the only way they know. And other people get by talking themselves out of anger. Now, some people repress anger so much that they're always depressed. I'm not suggesting repressing anger. I'm saying suppress it. I'm saying if you've got anger, consider it. Now, don't turn anger into self-blame. That's the biggest mistake. Don't criticize yourself for getting angry. Soothe yourself for getting angry. Turn around and say to yourself, oh, kitty, I see you're really upset. I love you so much. Saying to yourself, let's not go shouting at these people. Let's not shout at the guy on the motorcycle, you know, who's got the chains and the gun and everything else. Let's say, yeah, leave them alone. May not be in your best interest. Let's not go shouting at your boss. Let's not go shouting at your children and screaming at them and hitting them. Talk to yourself. Talk to yourself and try to soothe yourself. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. When I get back, I'm going to talk to you more about this, and we will take some calls. A lot of information, talking about the amygdala, talking about fear, talking about anger. Time to play you some chill-out music about maybe how eventually you'll be free from the trap of all that aggression and anger and pain that many people live in. I'll be back with you in a little bit. The music you're about to hear is John Lee Hooker. And John Lee Hooker is playing with Carlos Santana. A very exciting piece. It is just about 1:30 here at WBAI 99.5 FM in New York City.
after a while. Gonna do mine, gonna be mine. One of these days, I'm moaning, groaning, baby. Try, try, try. Won't be long, long. Thing gonna change. Of the night. Like it's so long, it's so long, it's so long. They ain't gonna change, they ain't gonna change. Change, change, change. They ain't gonna change. For the home of the road, baby. They ain't gonna change.
Hooker with Carlos Santana. All right, that'll kind of wake you up, eh, my friends? Injustice, anger, appropriate fear, appropriate. So I want to talk about, this is all leading, this is Armand Miller, in case you just tuned in, and it is WBAI 99.5 FM, and we are talking about things psychological. Yes, we're thinking about things that affect the human mind and how certain things are and why they are and why there are certain conditions. We're talking about anger. And I'm not talking about anger with judgment. I'm not saying to you it's bad to be angry. I'm just saying it's crazy to be angry. You know, it's like anger, it's there. It's a tool. Among humans, not so important. Among the lower animals, a very important thing. You know, stay out of my neighborhood because they don't have communication. They can't talk. Right? So if you got a house, you got babies, and another animal walks over you, anger. Which is, you know, basically fear because I don't want you to hurt my babies. Anger, you have somebody who threatens to take your man or your woman away and you growl at them. Anger. Why anger? Because you don't have the words to communicate it. Humans, I could tell you, do have the words, and they've got to be able to communicate it unless they are hit with this thing, this bug, which is this thing of fear that hits you. Okay, let's talk about depression, and let's talk about bipolar depression. In my career, I must have interviewed many thousands of people. And many times I would see, I would look for bipolar disorder. I would say to myself, oh, bipolar, that's manic depression. That means the person has, sometimes they feel good and sometimes they feel bad. And when they feel good, they feel a little too good. And when they feel bad, they feel very, very bad. And if this happens with any kind of a rhythm, it's called bipolar disorder. Well, they've discovered a lot more about bipolar disorder than this. It turns out that there's depression. A person is depressed. But one of the signs that a person is depressed is their inability to express anger. You see, people who are really classically depressed, they're always beating themselves up. They're criticizing themselves. They're talking about themselves in a negative way. They are constantly self-critical. They're depressed. They feel a sense of despair. Anger is not even allowed in their world because they have nobody to get angry at except themselves. They don't get mad. One of the people I knew, a very wise shrink, once said, it's a choice, either have anger or depression. That for the people who are depressed, they have to learn to get angry because early on, somewhere in childhood, they had an angerectomy. Yes, someone told them you don't have a right to be angry, and their anger was taken away from them. So now there you are, you know, you're a being who's in the jungle of life. But you don't have the power to defend yourself or fight for something you believe in. Somebody took away your right to get angry, and they may have just simply done it by saying, you know, don't get angry, it upsets your mother. So they don't get angry because you're going to hurt your mother's heart, or don't get angry at your father, or he'll kill you, or he'll kill me. So they, you don't have anger, and what do? Of course, if you're an animal in the world and you don't have the right to be angry, you live in a cave. You hide out. You say, well, I better not go out because I can't get angry. I can't take care of myself. And that's what depression is. Depression is living in a cave. It's living in a cave without the right to do anything to fight for yourself. That's depression. Depression has a few different forms. Another form of depression is a depression where you feel restless. Restless, agitated, but not necessarily angry. And it's called an agitated depression, and it's living hell. It's amazing. It's like trying to sleep after you drank a cup of coffee. You know, it's like you can't get to sleep. You can't relax. You can't seem. There's no safe place. It is a terrible thing. Now there's another condition where you're depressed, but you're nasty. Now this nastiness doesn't always show. But there's kind of a sense of anger in the depression and in despair. First of all, the person who's depressed tends to be blaming somebody all the time. You know, they don't see it, what they're doing, but they blame. You know, they won't let me do this. They won't give me this opportunity. They won't. My husband, my ex-husband is to blame. My kids are to blame. So they have this kind of edge to them all the time. They're not just depressed, but they're depressed with this kind of nasty edge. But they could also be very loving and very kind and very happy because the mania part, the mania part of the manic depression could manifest in any number of things, including positive emotion. They could be positive, but there's a nastiness to it. There's kind of an edge to it. If you don't get along with them very well, they could turn on you. This kind of person usually winds up with no friends because they've turned on every friend. Every job they've ever had, they have lost because they've had an outburst of anger at work. You know, nobody wants to tolerate them because they see this. Now, this used to be thought of as the borderline personality disorder. But it's not, because with borderline personality, you have a person who's not carrying this level of depression. In this case, the person who has got the bipolar depression is very despaired. They have so much despair. They feel so horrible all the time. They have the highest rate of incidence of suicide. You know, it's like because the anger they have this power. You know, depressed people very often don't kill themselves because they don't have the power to kill themselves. They don't have the energy to do it. But a person who is bipolar has this energy because there's kind of a rage sitting on top of this despair, and it's horrible, horrible, horrible. The life of somebody with a bipolar depression is horrific. It is so sad. It cracks my heart. When I see it, I say, oh my God, how could you possibly? It's like living on your elbows. You know, it's like crawling through the earth. It's not like regular depression because there's a little safety in depression. You could shut out the world. In bipolar depression, it's a living hell. And bipolar depression, once recognized, has been seen as having some kind of a chemical basis to it. There seems to be a way that it works. It seems to be something about, and I'm not sure about this, this is my own theory. You know, we have a right side of our brain and a left side of our brain, and one side of our brain is responsible for our thinking, and the other part is responsible for our feelings, and that every time we have some kind of an action, a thought, an emotion, we need both our thinking and our feelings. And there's got to be a transfer between the two. There's got to be a transfer from feelings to thinking, from thinking to feelings. It's got to go back and forth in a nice, smooth way. But when you have a bipolar disorder, it happens too rapidly. You could be fast, you could be slow, you could be fast. You can't put together your thinking and your feelings, so you become all emotional, or you become hyper-thinking, one way or the other. And the hyper-thinking can lead you to go out shopping endlessly, you know. It can make you go out and buy things because you have no consequence. You know, you have this feeling that life is so miserable that you're just begging something to take you out of it. You're wishing something is going to make you feel better. These people could be very sexually promiscuous because what? Who cares? They jump into anything. They look for saviors. They look for, you know, if you're a woman and somebody comes along and they say, I'm going to save you, just, you know, give me what I want. I'll give you what you want because my body doesn't mean anything. I'm yours because I hate being mine. So manic depression, bipolar depression is such a severe condition because of its angst. You know what I mean? It doesn't mean very, very crazy. It just means angst. Lots of angst. And because of this imbalance, because of this imbalance in the ability to bring together thought and feelings, it seems to respond to chemicals much better than it does to therapy alone. So when they discovered lithium carbonate, which I think is a horrific drug for people to take in large doses. But lithium carbonate has a funny effect. It seems to slow down. It seems to just, even a touch of it, seems to make this grief lift a little bit. And for that, I would refer to the medical people, you know, Ken Robert Shaw, the other people I know who talk about it significantly, that then when they treat these people and they recognize it, they give them a little something, a splash, they call it, of one of these drugs to kind of help the person get through just so they could get some peace. We have not found any nutritional approach to bipolar disorder, which I would love to have found, that is effective. We haven't found it because it's really about the amygdala firing off all these signals all the time and you can't control it. So what I have found is that if a person does get into therapy, and if they have therapy plus some kind of medication to slow down the transfer, to deal with this overload, they get better. There are so many aspects of bipolar disorder that I'd like to discuss with you. It teaches us so much about ourselves. But the key to this, the key to the understanding of this, is if you know somebody who's depressed and they have an edge of nastiness to them, I want you to suspect bipolar disorder instead of just straight depression. And if they're getting treated by a psychiatrist with just an SSRI or some medication that doesn't address this other part of it, then there's going to be a mistake in here, and it could be costly. You see, when a person goes to a shrink, what they do is they talk about their depression. They talk about their misery. So the shrink very often doesn't see that edge of nastiness. But you know the person who does? My people in the front desk, who are all trained and educated in psychology, they say to me when a person makes an appointment, boy, that person says they're depressed, but they were really nasty. They have a kind of disregard for people who they consider clerical. Or they smooth them and try to over-seduce them. But when I hear from my administrators that somebody who is coming in to see me was nasty, I suspect that disorder. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. It's a lot of information I'm bringing you. By the way, just so you know now, dealing with anger, on Tuesday of next week, I'm going to be bringing on the show Stephen Rosenstein, who wrote a book called Taming Your Inner and Your Outer Bullies. He's talking about bullies in life, talking about aggression. And he's saying that we have bullies inside ourselves and bullies outside ourselves. And then on Thursday, we've almost got this confirmed 100%. We're going to have a physician on air who's the head of Mount Sinai's pulmonary rehabilitation. He's a pulmonologist. What does that mean? He's going to talk about breathing. I want somebody who's going to talk to you about colds, about getting a cold. He wrote a book on how what to do when you get a cold, which I like. He's a guy who doesn't care much about money. He doesn't have much of a private practice. He's a teacher. He's an educator. And he's going to be with us in the studio here talking about lungs. He's going to talk about breathing. He's going to talk about asthma. He's going to talk about stuff that, you know, you hear people talk about in the holistic programs. But I want you to hear the medical approach as well, because I think the holistic stuff is terrific. I think Majid Ali's approach is probably fantastic. I think nutrition and diet is great. But there's no reason that DWBAI can't also represent medicine, because medicine is also phenomenal. It all goes together. You know, even the best nutritionist will say, and of course, whatever your medical doctor recommends too, is very important to pay attention to. It's not one or the other. So I want to bring on a few of the people who are professionals in the field, who may not go elsewhere, but keep in mind, if they're here on BAI, they're really saying, we want to give you real information. And they're not trying to win you over. They're not trying to sell you books. They're not trying to get patients. So that'll be on Thursday, the 15th of June. You may want to note that down. So Tuesday and Thursday, we both have booked for now. Now, hey, we even have time for a couple of calls. This is Armand DeMille with you at The Positive Mind. It's so much information, I think we will take a moment or two for telephone calls. 212-209-2900. You could call in. I'm not going to take the call yet. Just one more thing for you about maturity, that you should also understand that as a mature adult, as you mature, the older you get, the less angry you tend to get. Only you get angry when you start losing your faculties. You see, when you think about people with who have senility and they start being able to, they lose their functions and they can't move as well or they can't remember, there's a growing edge of anger that happens. Of course it does, because they're more fragile. Anger equals fear. When you get frightened, nastiness seems to be the only thing that's left. It's like a growl trying to tell the other animals, please stay away. 212-209-2900. Let me take one of your calls. This is Armand DeMille. Hi, you're on the air.
Oh, hey, how are you?
Good. Who is this?
Yeah, this is Osei.
Osei.
Yeah. Yeah, I'm really pleasantly surprised. Today's programming was really well put together, with a beginning, middle, and end, and a real conclusion based on the premises and thesis. I must say, today, because I normally, you know, no offense, I don't take you that serious, but today, this elucidation was really on point and very tightly done. I congratulate you.
Well, thank you so much, Jose, because, you know, I don't take myself very seriously either. And so there are times that I've let myself wisp and play a great deal on the air, you know, but when something touches my heart, when I see people in such torment, and I see that I want to bring something to you that is important, I really nail it down. And I want to thank my helpers for this, including Christine Ulrich, who is helping me research, and Stephanie Dombra, who assists me with this. It's a team, and I want to thank you. Thank you, Osei.
Not a problem.
Sure. No, it's not a problem. 212-209-2900, Armand DeMille. Let's take another call. Hi, you're on the air.
Hi, Armand.
Hi there.
Did you ever hear of this book called Healing Trauma by Peter Levine?
Sure, Peter's an old friend of mine.
Right. Peter, it sounds like what you were talking about before, like, you know, when you get really angry or depressed as you know, when you're younger and you can't express it. And he says, you know, animals, they go through this fear, they discharge it, but as adults, we don't discharge it. And then we carry it around, I guess, as depression. Do you have a method of how we should discharge that, you know, that those feelings when you're younger? And, you know, maybe your mother said, you know, be quiet, don't express your anger.
Well, you see, so there you are. The key here is once a person gets depressed, they have taken the anger and swallowed it and turned it against themselves. Psychotherapy is the effect of being able to have somebody talk about that anger, at least uncover it. Because very often, you know, you can't even see it. You're hidden behind your self-blame. Uncover it. Now, we happen to have, there's a process I believe in called the intense feeling process of psychotherapy, which is so fast and dynamic at reaching into the bowel of that anger. It gets down all the way to the bottom of it and makes it expressed as fast as possible. So psychotherapy doesn't have to take a long time. So that's what I believe in as a process. You know, and Peter, by the way, was so much ahead of his time in the research, because that book was written, at least 12 years ago.
Right.
And the science that has happened since, the discovery since, neuroscience and the brain function and a little further work, all validates everything he believed in. Mm-hmm. Do you know Peter, by the way?
I know. Someone recommended the book.
You should meet him. He's particularly good with dealing with stress reactions, you know, or what happens to you after there's a crisis.
Right.
And he's phenomenal. He's a great man.
You know, you mentioned someone older, like, you know, example, if I'm dealing with my mother and she's lashes out and then I leave and you feel sad, you know, about that. You know,
well,
they're older and getting
sad?
A little...
What's your name?
Bob.
Bob, tell me, this: when she lashes out, do you actually hear the words she's saying to you? Does she criticize you? Does she tell you you're not loving her enough? What happened?
Yeah, she has criticized. She has said critical things.
And so you try to tell her back. You see, you try to deal with content with content. Remember, she's scared and she's talking out of her fear.
Mm-hmm.
And the way that you deal with people who do that is you do not try to reason with them. Because the reason doesn't do anything.
Mm-hmm.
You know?
Right.
What you do in dealing with them is to recognize the fact that there's somebody who just is barking and saying these horrible things, but don't respond to the words because the words have no meaning.
And how do you respond, like, you know, not to feel depressed when you see them if they're slightly demented, not living well, and things like
that? It's very tough. The more difficult part of all dementia is the people who are in the family. The depression that hits. I would research that if I were you and learn a little bit about it, mm-hmm. about what happens to the mates and children of people who have dementia.
Mm-hmm.
Because you'll see it is predictable. The depression is predictable.
Mm-hmm.
Dementia doesn't kill the person who's got the dementia, but it does tend to do real harm on the people who are related to them.
Right, because after I see her, I feel more depressed.
Yeah, so this is a good time for you to have a therapy where you could go in a room and pound the hell out of the pillow and just get that all out of your system.
Right. Is there a truth to looking at it like this is their karma and you got to separate yourself? And
yeah, if it worked. But the fact that, you know, that it's a get-nip.
Right. Good in theory, not in practice.
You understand. You're a real listener, Bob.
Right.
You're a beautiful guy. Thank you for calling in.
Thank you.
Sure.
Bye-bye.
So this is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. I wish we had time, but, you know, things just... Well, we do have time for one more call. Let's take one more call. One more. Hi, you're on the air. This is Armand DeMille. I may have tricked the engineer with that one. Hi there. You're on the air.
Hi, sir.
Hi, ma'am.
I suffer with depression basically all my life. I'm 40 years old now. And I don't know. It just feels like I go to therapy, but I'm not getting anything out of therapy.
How long have you been in therapy?
I've been in therapy now about 5 years.
That's a long time. I think that's much too long for therapy if there's not some chemical component going on. What do they call you? What do they say about your depression? Do they say it's depression? Do they say it's bipolar?
Manic depression?
Yeah, they call it bipolar, which is what I hear. So this is exactly what the show is about today. The
How
bipolar
can I get
part.
The transcripts of your show?
Oh, I don't have transcripts. You could listen to the show, though, because we have it on the Internet. You could re-listen to it again. But what it may need, you know, the therapy may need. Do you do any medication at all? Are you taking any medication?
I take Wellbutrin.
Uh-huh. And is that all you take?
That's all I take.
You see, so what they're doing is treating the depression, but they're not treating the cyclothymia or the bipolar aspect of it.
And as it was stated before, it has affected my family. It has run into my children now. My oldest son, he's 16, and I think he also has...
I think you need a more thorough psychiatric evaluation. You know, I think you need somebody who could try to maybe take a look at it because it's 5 years. And you should have a different medication than just the Wellbutrin, but I'm not a physician. It's just an opinion. But if you call my office, I'll direct you to somebody.
Okay. Can I get the number?
212-757-4488.
4488. Okay, thank you so much, and I really enjoyed the show. I only caught half of it. I'm at work.
Okay, we go on the internet. You can hear the other half. It'll be replay again and podcast. This is Armand DeMille with you with The Positive Mind. Sorry to overstate myself today. Information is so important. If you want a copy of today's program or if you want to listen to it on the internet, you can do it either through iTunes, where you go to podcast and you go to higher education, or you could do it through the website, thepositivemind.com. Be back with you on Tuesday at 1 p.m., my friends.